3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill with you. Thanks for being here once again. Two in a row. Here we go. Getting back in the rhythm. Season less than a week away now. How great is that? Mariners played the Angels yesterday, too, in spring training. But a week from now, it's going to be for real. Just a short week away, less than a week now, till the season begins. So coming up in this one, we're going to do our first preview of another AL West team. We're going to check in. I'm really excited about this one. We're going to check in with Alex Hall, who we've had on before, and he's going to give us insight on the Oakland A's. And given their roster turnover, I think you may be surprised what Alex has to say about where the A's are at right now coming into this season. They turned just about their entire roster over. A few key holdovers, obviously, Sonny Gray, others, but so many new faces. So where are they at heading into this year? So we'll get some insight. Also, Aaron Goldsmith, he's going to sit down with Nelson Cruz, get some thoughts from the new middle-of-the-order thumper for the Mariners. That comes up as well. But first, I want to touch on yesterday a little bit as Taiwan Walker pitched once again. Yeah, he gave up a run, finally. 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, no walks, 5 strikeouts. He has been absolutely dominant this spring. I mean, the numbers, I know, spring training, but the numbers are really eye-popping, given what he has done this season in the spring.
The 0-2, swing and a miss, strike 3, blew it past him, some high heat once again. Taiwan Walker strikes out the side in order here in the fourth, and he has fanned now 5 Cubs batters through 4 innings.
That's from a couple starts ago. Taiwan Walker, spring or not, the numbers really stand out. A 0.36 ERA in 6 starts, 25 innings overall, just 9 hits, 1 run, a solo home run. That has been it. He's walked 4. He has fanned 24. It's a pretty solid strikeout-to-walk ratio. Opponents batting just 1.11 against him. His whip, 0.52. Spring or not, very impressive stuff from Taiwan Walker, certainly earning the job in the rotation. He has been great. I mean, he left exactly where we saw him last in Toronto. I mean, that's what he was like in his last start. Remember, late September against the Blue Jays, he has picked up exactly where he left off. We'll see if that carries over to the regular season. It would be huge. I mean, think about what this rotation can be and the potential of this rotation. You already have Felix Iwakuma at the top. Man, Walker, Paxton, if those guys can reach their potential, watch out. Rotation has some serious potential to be great. So that's the story. Yesterday, Mariners got the win against the Angels. We'll do some more roster talk as we move through this week as the cuts are coming and just a few decisions left to be made before the final 25-man is set and ready for the regular season. One man we know who will be on the 25-man roster, Nelson Cruz. DH set to be the middle of the order. Aaron Goldsmith, a chance to catch up with the Mariners slugger.
Well, Nelson, welcome to your first Mariners spring training. Judging by what we've seen on the field, you have settled in very nicely. What has this first camp with Seattle been like for you so far?
It's been nice. It's kind of easy when you come up with a clubhouse and everybody's friendly, you know, everybody welcome to be part of the team. Great teammates, great atmosphere, you know, great manager, great coaches, so it's going to be more easy.
You bring up Lloyd when talking about a great manager. What have your first impressions with Lloyd been like? He's a guy that is about as even keel as they come.
Yeah, I mean, he's let you go and do your job, you know, whatever you can bring to the table, just bring that and he don't ask you for anything else.
It's interesting because now we think of Nelson Cruz and we think of you as the superstar that you are, but there was a time when you really were having to work very, very hard just to get a foothold into Major League Baseball. When you were 28 years old, you had 22 home runs to your name. That was it in Major League Baseball. There was a time when you were with the Rangers that at the end of spring training, you were placed on waivers. You cleared waivers. You went back to the minors with Texas. Can you talk us through the journey that you have gone through and all the hard work that it has taken you to get to the point in your career where you are today?
It's not easy. I mean, you ask any players, maybe one or two of those guys, they come up and be superstars. You know, I mean, you can mention probably Robbie Cano, Felix. Those type of guys, they want to come up to the big leagues and just establish themselves right away. If you ask any other guys, you know, probably they be the same journey. I mean, one harder than others, but it's not an easy way to come to the big leagues and establish yourself, you know. Being through waivers is, I think, the toughest time in my career, you know. You work so hard to be in that point, to be in the situation, to be in the 40-man roster. Being a 40-man roster, the big league team, and to be out of that, it's kind of hit you, you know.
It's good to be talking with Nelson Cruz. And, Nelson, since 2009, only four active players in Major League Baseball have hit more home runs than you have. How has your swing developed from the time that you were just talking about when you cleared waivers to where it is now?
I think since 2007, I think my swing was there, you know. I got sent down the first half of 2007. Then after I got called up for the second half, I feel like my swing was there, you know. Unfortunately, 2008, I was competing for a spot. And, I lose my job in that situation. But I came point since that year, you know, everything changed.
So it sounds like the swing was the same. It was just a matter of you keeping the conviction in it, staying with it, and knowing that it will pay results will be paid off at some point with it.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the main thing for any hitter is to be confident, you know, confident in what you have and believe what you have, you know, and go there and execute it.
You have a great nickname, the Boomstick. Where did that nickname come from? Do you remember when you were first referred to as Boomstick?
Yeah, that was in 2009. We do the commercial for 2K, the Major League Baseball video games. And
with Andrew Bailey, correct?
With Andrew Bailey, yeah. And in the commercial, I just said myself like the Boomstick. So since then, it's been a part of me, you know.
You were drawing in the commercial. You were drawing this picture, and you there was basically a stick figure of yourself with an enormous bat. And you said, in your own words, "I will take my boomstick and I will basically hit it far out of the ballpark." So was this a writer's idea with MLB 2K10 that came up with, "Hey Nelson, what do you think about referring to yourself as Boomstick or your bat as the Boomstick?"
Yeah. It was kind of like that. I mean, they gave me a few options, and I stick with that one.
Did you have any idea that it would carry with you until today?
No. I mean, it's something that you do, and I mean, you just try to be yourself, you know, and I mean, thanks God it worked the good way, you know. Everywhere I go, people ask me if I brought my boomstick, even if you care with me, my boomstick, where is it, you know. So.
Now, speaking of the boomstick, in Arlington, there was, well, almost a very grotesque hot dog called the Boomstick, which has about 3,000 calories in it. And they then replicated the Boomstick with wheels, and they drove the Boomstick around the warning track. The first question is, have you ever eaten the Boomstick hot dog?
I haven't. I took a picture with it, you know. But having eaten it, I rode the Boomstick car.
You rode the Boomstick?
Yeah, I rode the Boomstick car a few times, but I haven't eaten the Boomstick.
Well, that Boomstick car is sitting in the back hallways of Globe Life Park, so you'll probably see it. And you probably saw it last year with the Orioles, I'd have to think.
Yeah, I saw it last year. So.
It was a little dusty.
I thought they were going to get out of that, but at least they have some memories in it.
Sure. You're from the Dominican Republic. So is Robinson Cano. We know that you and Robinson and Fernando Rodney have a fine relationship. It's really worth taking a moment and talking about all of the players that are in the major leagues right now that are from the Dominican, and the list is too long to really go over each one, and some have retired since, but a lot of these guys go by first names. Albert, Manny, Big Papi, Vlad, Sammy, Adrian Beltre from the Dominican, of course, and on the pitching side, a couple of Hall of Famers, now Pedro Martinez, Juan Marichal. What is it about the Dominican Republic that has produced so many superstar players?
I guess we love baseball, you know. You, when you get married, you hope you have a boy, you know. I hear history about Carlos Gomez's dad. He was hoping he can get married a tall woman so he can have a baseball player. And then because he was short, so he was looking for a tall woman, and he found one, and they get Carlos Gomez. So, I mean, it's not just him. And any family hope to get a boy, and hopefully he can get a baseball. They can get a baseball player and go to the big leagues. You know, that's the way we dream about life. Baseball is everything in Dominican. So, I guess when you have that much passion for the game, you know, a lot of good players come out from there.
You have played in just about 40 postseason games. You have proven to be a phenomenal postseason hitter, an average at about 300, an OPS over 1,000, 16 home runs. What is it like playing on the biggest stage, especially in the World Series or even last year in the postseason with Baltimore, when all of a sudden things intensify to a degree that you just can't replicate during the regular season?
I don't know. I guess I like the moments. I like the big situation. I like to be in this spot where you have to deliver, you know, where if you don't get it, it's win or lose, you know. So I guess I like to be in that spot, you know. And I guess I'm working hard during the season, so when that moment comes, I'm definitely prepared.
There it is, Aaron Goldsmith with Nelson Cruz. And someone he and the Mariners will be very familiar with once again, the Oakland A's, although they don't start with the Oakland A's for the first time in a while. But very interesting team after what happened last year. Of course, the ups and downs at times looked like the best team in baseball and then really struggled to end the season, able to secure that last spot in the postseason against the Mariners that last day. But where are they at after their giant roster shakeup? So many big names out. Plenty of all-stars out, bringing fresh faces, new talent. So where are they? So it's time to take a close look at the Oakland A's. Well, now we get a chance to welcome back to the show Alex Hall from AthleticsNation.com. You can see him on Twitter, at Alex Hall, A-N. Alex is back with us. He was with us several times last year. It's great to get his take once again on the Oakland A's. And, Alex, I remember two specific times we had you on. One, the A's were just riding high, a team that was scoring a ton of runs, best pitching staff in the league, best team in the American League. It seems like they weren't going to lose a game all season. Later on in the season, we talked to you, and they couldn't get out of their own way, really struggling. When it was all said and done, what is the take of last season for a typical A's fan?
Last season was difficult. It wasn't just a collapse. It was the culmination of a three-year competitive window, and you felt like you were finally at the end right there, at the end of the road. You felt like you had finally put together that team that at least had a chance to have its name in the hat and go all the way. And then you see it all get sucked away by a couple of trades that I still will mostly stand behind, but that apparently didn't quite work right. A bunch of injuries, a couple of slumps, and then suddenly you had one of the worst teams in baseball heading into the playoffs. And then not only do you get knocked out by the upstart that kind of makes you think of your own team from years past, you know, the upstart that no one believed in. Of course, you know, they beat you. And then worst of all, you got to watch the Giants go through and win the World Series again. But this time it felt like the World Series that the A's were supposed to win. And it just made it even tougher to watch.
And then on the heels of that, what a major offseason of change for the Oakland A's. I mean, we don't have time to detail all the moves. We'd be here for the next 3 hours because it was a roster turnover from last year to this year. Although, some seem to be discounting the A's in coming into this year. I still think they have a lot of talent on that team. But what's your take heading into this season in the general sense of what it looks like for the Oakland A's?
For an A's fan, what happened this winter should be not only familiar but expected. The team that existed, we saw it play very well for a few years, and we also saw it consistently come up short. That team had a shot, had three shots, actually, to get the job done. It was great. It was fun. We loved those players. A lot of fan favorites there. A lot of guys that we're gonna follow throughout their careers, even on other teams, just because we like them so much. But that team, it just didn't get it done, and it was time to move on. And, you know, I may not have admitted that in September or October because it's kind of hard to realize until you kind of see the aftermath, and then you realize maybe Billy Dean was onto something here. getting, you know, his philosophy with this, I would say, would be to sell a year too early instead of a year too late. So he took some star players who you look at and you said, hey, you know, you still could have had a good team in 2015 with this core of guys, Donaldson and Moss and Norris and DeMarge, and all these guys could have put together a real good team in 2015. But the thing is, they still might not have, you know, guys are getting into their 29, 30, 31, 32 years old. You never know when a guy's going to drop off. When's that year that he's going to hurt something real bad and miss half the season? And what you set yourself up for is having nothing at the end to trade off for your next rebuild. Now you're looking at the full Astro-style rebuild, you know, a couple of years down the road. And what we've got instead is selling a year too early on those players, cashing in on their value while they're still stars, but banking that they're not going to be stars like that for too much longer. Maybe you're only going to lose that last peak year before that player starts to get paid more for declining production. And so he's traded off the stars a year too early, and that's let him get a star return back and put together what I would call possibly an equally good team to what he had last year. You know, it started out great, ended bad into an 88-win season. I could see this team matching that.
We're listening with Alex Hall. He has a real in-depth look at the A's at athleticsnation.com, a preview of this season. You mentioned 88 wins for the A's this year. So where do you see them? Where does that put them in the division and the playoff hunt?
Well, you might like this part. might sound like I'm pandering a bit here, but no, I wrote this down a couple weeks ago. I can prove it. And that is that the 88 wins for the A's, you know, if they get in that neighborhood, I still see them only competing for a wild card. I mean, they certainly can win the division. Almost anyone could theoretically win the AL West. There isn't necessarily the guaranteed lock at the top like you see, like the Nationals are definitely going to win the NL East. Not that luck. Anyone could win the West if enough things go right. But it just seems like the A's are probably more likely to be fighting for that scrap at the end and going for the wild card. And, of course, it could even be that they fall out of that race. But I would say most likely would be the wild card. But, you know, I got to pick Mariners right now. I'm almost afraid to, just because of history. I don't need to explain that to anyone listening to this, I don't think. But I just, you know, it feels like every year, you know, Jack Z makes a bunch of moves and then comes one move short. That's always the feeling I get. And I didn't feel like he came one move short this time. You know, he got a bunch of hitters. He still got the pitchers. Now we got to see if the hitters can solve Safeco Field. If they can or can't, we'll see. But they're my kind of highest percentage pick right there. So I'm going with them right now to win the division.
If the A's are going to win 88 games and take a wild card, what has to happen for them this year?
Well, they're going to have to stay healthy, because although they've got a lot of versatility and maybe not one star player, there's not a lot of room for two guys to get hurt. If you start losing two or three regulars from the lineup, you might find someone decent, but there's not a lot in the farm major league ready to replace those guys. So of course you got to have health, but every team needs health. So you almost don't need to really mention that one. They're going to need at least one of these new starting pitchers to step up, and that means Jesse Hahn, Kendall Graveman, maybe when Sean Nolan comes back from a little spring recovery from his offseason surgery, one of those guys to step up and be a good number three starter behind Sonny Gray and Scott Kazmir. Those two alone aren't going to be able to get it done. You know, Billy Beane knew that last year, and he went out and got a bunch of help at a very high price. Those two aren't going to get it done this year if the A's want to make the playoffs. So a third guy stepping, or even Drew Pomeranz could be that guy stepping up. You know, there's a lot of options, but one of them's going to have to do it and pitch like a mid-rotation guy and not a number four or five guy. Any of those guys, by the way, is capable of reaching that point. Hahn is probably my top pick to do it. He came back from the Padres in the Derek Norris trade, so there's one to look for. And then on the other side, I got to see Marcus Semien work out as the shortstop. And that means he's got to hit decently, which I'm actually not worried about really that much at all. I think he will be a perfectly fine hitter, at least above average. But he's got to stick defensively at short, because everything else falls into place. If Semien can be at short, then you get to keep Zobrist in position at second or in the corner outfield. You get to keep Lurie in position at third. You get to keep all the outfield. I mean, everything's kind of fits together in the right puzzle pieces if you keep Semien at short. So that means he's got to be, I don't know, let's say at least as good as Jed Lowry, which is not a very high standard, but I mean, it's certainly possible to not be good enough.
Local product, former California Golden Bear as well. But It's interesting when you talk about all the offensive changes with the Oakland A's, because you look at the season-long numbers last year, and they were great for the A's. They scored a ton of runs, but so much of that production came early in the season. How much better can this offense be for Oakland compared to the offense we saw in the last month or so for the Oakland A's, the last offense we saw from the A's?
And you see the reason why it's tough to compare anything to last season, just because it really was a tale of two seasons, right? And such big extremes from the very best offense to in the bottom 10 in those last couple of months. But the biggest stat that we've liked playing with on Athletics Nation this winter is looking at the infield as a combined unit. And in this case, we're just sticking with second base and shortstop and third base. And when you combine them together and you look at that batting line with the batting average and the on-base and the slugging percentage, even though you've got Josh Donaldson in last year's batting line and he's gone from this one, those three positions combined are still projected on things like Steamer to be better than last year's infield. Wow. And the point of that is not to say anything bad about Donaldson, because he had objectively a good year. The point of that is to show how bad second base and shortstop were last year. They were so bad that they dragged Donaldson down. They were further below average than he was above average. They were possibly they had an argument for the very worst position. Athletic second baseman had an argument for the worst position in baseball last year. I hate to say that the only thing competing with them was Seattle Mariners center fielders, and I'm not just making that up. That's by the numbers. So that infield group, and this isn't even giving pie in the sky projections. This is giving very conservative projections. If one of those guys breaks out, it's even better. So the infield's better, but also there's a lot of worry about the power. But the home run power, you lose these big bats like Donaldson hitting almost 30, Brandon Moss can hit 30, Cespedes had, 4 months in Oakland here, and you lose all these big bats and Norris and Jaso, and where are the home runs going to come from? You didn't get anyone back who looks like they're going to necessarily hit 20. But you go back to those projection systems again. Last year's A's hit 146 home runs. This year, Steamer, the projection system, has the A's down for 143, which means that even getting rid of all of their guys, they found enough solid hitters 1 through 9 through the lineup to make that, bottom line look similar to last year. And then if you compare it to just the last month of last year, like you were saying, it'll be astronomical. I mean, anyone would be better than the last month of last year. They had absolutely nothing. Everyone was either injured or being replaced by a bench player.
I think the bullpen's pretty interesting, too, when you talk about Oakland. Doolittle's nails, but not exactly healthy right now. Clifford's going to be in his spot to start the season in terms of the back end. Is the bullpen going to be as good this year as it has been? It's been a real strength for the A's the last couple of seasons.
Last year's bullpen was tough to analyze because on the surface it put together great numbers. I think they had something like the third best ERA. I might be a couple off on that. Mm-hmm. Something like the third or fourth best ERA in all of baseball, I think. And the reality was the bullpen was the weakest part of the team because they put up these numbers, in the middle innings, but just, man, did it feel like every day they'd come out and blow it in the eighth or the ninth. And it showed up because they were among the major league leaders in blown saves. And I don't, that's going to include those middle innings, the seventh and eighth innings. You blow the lead then, you still get a blown save. Heck, you can blow two saves in a game, and they did a couple of times. And you got Jim Johnson exploding. Luke Gregerson had a low ERA, but again, he led the league in blown saves. A couple by Ryan Cook, a couple more here or there. And so you get the feeling that the bullpen was strong by the numbers, but then when they actually came in the game, it just seemed like more, especially at the end of the season. Jeff Samardzija would come out and throw 8 shutout innings, and then someone would come out and blow it in the ninth. And the good news is a couple of the big offenders are gone. Jim Johnson, of course, didn't even last the season. Mm-hmm. Luke Gregerson signed with the Astros. So, hey, there you go. We both get to beat up on him there. and hopefully what remained was the good part. Sean Doolittle, we don't know how long he'll be out with some rotator cuff issues, but he's supposedly coming back soon, only going to miss a couple weeks of the season. You got Tyler Clifford on board to close. Ryan Cook actually got sent down to AAA. I assume that means he's not starting the season. That should be a familiar name to anyone in the AL West. But I'm sure he'll be back. And then there's a few more familiar names. Some of the good ones from last year are still coming back.
Beyond the Mariners and the A's, how do you see the rest of the division shaking out?
Oh, man. Well, at the end of this preview, here was the order that I put it in. And I'll give a very short explanation. It was Mariners first. It was A's second. I put the Astros third. I put the Angels fourth, and I put the Rangers fifth. Mm. And, of course, the one in there that probably makes you makes your ears prick up with Angels fourth. Mm-hmm. A little bit of that is because with great power comes great trolling responsibility, and who wouldn't want to put the Angels in fourth place? But I also, you know, I have concerns about every team in the division, and that means them too. And I'm going to have to put someone in fourth who I don't really believe is only a fourth place team, because honestly, I think the Astros are better than a fourth place team now as well.
Yeah.
And so that's not necessarily a fourth place because you're going to suck. It's a fourth place because I don't think anyone's really going to, you know, you might be fourth place and only 8 games back in this division. I don't know. So I've put them in fourth, and I put the Astros ahead of them just because I could. And because honestly, you look at that Astros lineup right now and their rotation, and what you don't see anymore is that laughable player, the one that shouldn't even be in the majors. You look through and you're like, oh, no, actually, you know, all those guys should be in a major league lineup. You know, you got Evan Gattis in the middle there. You got, you know, McHugh and Keuchel were fantastic last year in the rotation. And, you know, maybe not everyone follows it up, but that's not, it's not an embarrassing team anymore, and it could easily make third place this year.
No, you make a great point. It feels like with the Astros improving, the Angels taking a step back, Mariners improving, the A's staying the same or taking a slight step back, it feels like the division has got even closer with one another. I mean, it could shake out in any way when you look at it.
And I'll tell you, the one move that I did not like from the AL West this year was the Angels trading Howie Kendrick.
Yeah.
Now, this could come back and blow up in my face if the pitcher they got back turns out to be a stud. But, man, you know, it feels like they're in a win-now season, and every year they're going to decline more and more with some of their old players. And they just traded one of their best win-now players, you know, for a pitching for. I mean, great, they should be getting starting pitching, but at the cost of, you know, they don't have anyone to replace them at second base. I worry now about, you know, their middle infield. They just traded away their second baseman, and I don't understand why.
How disappointed will A's fans be if the Mariners choose to start Felix Hernandez on opening day instead of pushing him back a few days and letting him start against the A's in the first game of that series?
Oh, you would. I will say we are relieved to not be facing the Mariners on opening day this year. It's getting a little bit boring. We get it. Felix is going to beat us. We've all seen that rerun before. You know, you don't tune in on the season premiere to watch a rerun of last season, right? So we're very happy to not be seeing Felix for what we saw him 4 straight years in a row there, I think.
Yeah.
And we're working on our, if we lose this year, I believe that's 10 opening days in a row, or was 10 last year. Oh, I should know this. We was either 9 or 10 last year. So we're working on double digits now. Last time we won an opening day was, I remember, I was in college, 2004. So
wow.
Yeah, that makes last year 10, right?
Oh, yeah. Man.
We got to win opening day, but we're facing the Rangers, and apparently not Yu Darvish now.
Yeah,
so bummer for him, but maybe we can beat, you know, Nick Pettish or whoever goes on opening day for them.
Well, Alex, great stuff as always. This will be the first of many visits this year. You know, the Mariners and A's, they'll be battling once again this season. Alex Hall from AthleticsNation.com. I recommend checking out his stuff, especially his in-depth preview. Make sure you see that. You can see him on Twitter at Alex Hall AN. Alex, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks a lot, Gary. Good luck with you.
And the 1-1 on the way to Brett. Here she comes, and it swung on and lined into center field for a base hit. And here comes David Bell with another run to score, another RBI for Boone, and a career RBI high for Boone. 7 RBIs tonight. And the Mariners now lead it 11-6.
See you later!